When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Note Show podcast is brought to you by Life Recovery Water, offering up three tasty, thirst-quenching blends guaranteed to refuel your body while satisfying your palate. The three flavors, watermelon, pineapple, and coconut, rehydrate the body with necessary electrolytes such as potassium, magnesium, phosphorus, and calcium. These electrolyte properties are vital to any athlete or sports enthusiast after a tough workout, a tough training session, or a tough night out in the town. Replenishing the body with an all-natural product is the best way to recover. Life Recovery Water, get some today. On this episode of the Note Show podcast, Gil looks back on his exit from Golden State and his arrival in Washington. He recalls a few other teams that could have been for Agent Zero, and yes, a coin flip to decide his next team. In DC, Gil found a franchise looking to turn the page from the previous Michael Jordan era and a fan base craving success. Before he'd figure things out as a Wizard, the Cali Kid would have to adjust to the East Coast. Once he got comfortable, the takeover was on and a new era was in full swing. Here it is, episode 3 of the Note Show podcast. Subscribe to the Note Show podcast wherever you get your podcast and follow Note Show Productions on YouTube for all things Note Show. She a thought to me, and me a thought to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally. She a thought to me, and me a thought to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally. All right, so where we left off last time, it was your departure from Golden State. So we're going to dispel the myth right now. Did you really make your decision with a coin flip?
Yes. That's not a myth. That's true.
Was anybody there to report it?
No. Yeah. No, just me.
This is the first.
But because it came down to it came down to Clippers and Washington. But I think I was the second sought out free agent. You know, it went Lamar Odom, then me, and then I didn't really pay attention to anyone behind me. But the team everyone thought I was going to was Denver. Because Kiki Vandeweghe trained me and Jason and Troy, you know, during our first 2 years in the summer, going into the draft, so working on footwork. So he was, you know, really, I think he's seen my potential first. So he already expressed that I'm coming after you. Miami, they just drafted Dwayne Wade. Then Utah, Denver, Clippers, and then Washington came later. So the word was Pat Riley didn't want to pay a young guy. He didn't believe in paying young players. And because they got Dwayne Wade, they were thinking, we can probably try to put him at the one with his skill set. So, you know, that had been a conflict of interest. Utah, I just pushed out the window because I was not going to follow John Stockton, I'm not going to follow that guy. I'm sorry, you know. I'm a scorer. He's a passer. That's if you were used to for the last 17 years at a guy sitting here doing no look pass, and I'm a guy
but
that was
their
passing.
Pitch to you would have been, yeah, we're starting this new chapter around a scoring guard. Okay, obviously, they don't have Stockton Malone anymore. It's your team.
Yeah, that's great from franchise point, but fans view. You have one of the best point guards ever play who was a passer, and I'm a young scorer, so that is not how I wanted to start my career. What they did is they tried to call a bluff because I was asking for the max at that point, which was I think like $84 million, and they said, well, we don't need him, we'll sign Andre Miller. So they signed Andre Miller, I think 51. It was like $51 million. And then it was like, okay, we'll give Gilbert, 53. And my agent was like, oh, no, no, they're not even on the same wavelength. You overpaid for Andre. Andre was good 2 years ago, and you're paying him for what he did 2 years ago, but he didn't have a great year last year. So we're not going to put them in the same. But thank you for making the bottom end, you know, $51 million. So I think me and Lamar Odom was trying to wait each other out because just like anything, there's a lead dog, and then everyone sniffs the lead dog's ass. So I was the first dog to be smelling his ass at that point.
You're sniffing around a bit.
So I knew I was about, my agent was like, you're about $8 to $10 million away from what Lamar's going to get. So depending on what Lamar gets, you can bounce right under that, you know, just a little levy bounce. So Clippers offered $55 million. And that was interesting because they had seven free agents, and the rumor was he was going to let them all go. And the NBA said, no, you're going to have to fucking pay someone. You're going to have to pay some of these guys. Fuck that. You're going to spend money.
Elgin Baylor moves. Donald Sterling moves.
Donald Sterling moves. Yeah. Yes. You know, it was one of those. His thing was bring him in for 4 years, get rid of him. I'm not going to spend money. But this, he was told he had to bring some people in there. He had to spend money finally. So what ends up happening is, Washington was at about 55, 53 also. And Byron Russell decided to opt out of his deal. Once he opted out of his deal and the salary cap went up, it pushed Washington to $64 million. So now they were the lead dog. And Byron Russell wanted to come here and play for the Lakers. So once that opened up, you know, boom, they became top-notch at 64. So I had my visit with, you know, I went to Clippers first, had a meeting with them, went to Washington, had the meeting with Abe Pollin, and, you know, he was basically saying, listen, I'm getting killed right now. The Jordan thing is killing me. I'm getting bad press. I need someone to come in here and help me out of it.
Right, talk about a regime change. That
yeah,
was
and he was saying,
a weird time to come into that franchise.
And he said it. He said, no free agents wants to come. So, this is your city. He said, there's no star here. He said, you have Clinton Portis, who's, you know, risk and star, but as a president, you don't have a charisma guy who can be a legit star. It's open here. So I was like, okay. If you can help me out of this Jordan era, you'll be taken care of. I was like, okay. So I go to, my last visit is with Golden State. And they picked me up in the private jet. And guess who's in the private jet? Terrell Owens.
Okay.
Because he was 49er receiver, big dude. And like, you know, and he's just telling me about the Bay Area. But, you know, obviously I was there for 2 years. I know what the Bay Area is. You know, so we didn't work out a deal there, which it would have been sketchy anyway, and I'm glad I didn't do the deal because I couldn't have trusted the process, you know, because they couldn't match, because at that time, there was no Gilbert Arenas rule, and the rule was if you didn't have your bird rights, you could only get the mid-level exception. Back then, it was like a seven-year, six-year, 42 million, seven-year, 42, but I overexceeded that. So what ends up happening is if I have an offer for 64, but Golden State can only offer me 42, they're behind.
And also because a second-round pick had never performed at
so
that level.
So the reason that is it never came up until me is because a second-rounder has never performed that fast and overexceeded that $42 million. And that's why they were benching me during that year. They were trying to keep me under that mid-level exception.
Right. So you kind of saw something come, like there was some fuckery at hand.
Yeah, it was.
I suppose the league would be involved in that a little bit.
No, this is a team thing. Because, I mean, the team can afford $42 million, but if a guy is averaging 18, 8, and 8.
But isn't that the point of the Players Association? Like there should be somebody that's on your side to defend you.
Defend me from who? The team is if the
not
team
not getting the offer that you deserve.
No, it's part of the contract, so they couldn't go over. They couldn't go over. So the team decided, well, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, he's going to be worth $50 million, $60 million, $70 million. We can't afford him. Lower his minutes and get him under that 42. So the fact that I'm going into an immediate and they can't afford it, so they're, you know, so the deal was, this is truth, the deal was 1 year, 4.9. 1 year, 4.9, under the table deal that would have been signed that day, 7 year, $79 million. That would have been held in a safe, my possession, and I would have went back to Golden State for that 1 year, and then boom, right. I'd have got that contract, which I was excited for because one, they had a Viper outside, a Ferrari outside, you know,
sweeten the pot.
Yeah, this is yours, and I'm like, oh shit, yes, that's what I'm talking about.
What does your agent say?
My agent and Otis, because you know Otis was my guy, so I'm sitting there. They left the room, and we're talking about it. And Otis is looking at me, like, "Don't fucking be a nigra." You know, basically, he gave me that "don't be a nigra" look. I know you're looking at the cars and all that, but you can afford that if you just sign the $64 million
right now.
You know, and you know he said one thing. He said, "Jason Richardson, Troy Murphy, and Michael Dunleavy, and you. Someone's not going to get paid. They can't pay all of you." And I was sitting there thinking, okay, so what is he trying to say? But I already have, I'm like, I already have a contract. You know, if I sign him, I'm signing both. And I understood what he was saying, that someone's going to get fucked, and you already have $64 million on the table in your hand right now. Take it. So when we did the math, also, Washington was way better because I'm starting off first year, if I'd have went back, 4.9. Washington, 8 million. Next year, what, 6-something, 9. By the time the money matched up, I would have been out of the Washington deal, hopefully signing a max deal. You know, so I called up, you know, Abe and told him I was going to come. Oh, well, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I did flip a coin.
Because also with about the Clippers, that's a return to L.A.
Yeah, Clippers, I got $55 million on the Clippers, and then I got 64 in Washington.
Also, but the thought about playing in L.A. where you're from?
Because I've never left the West Coast, the East Coast was kind of, it was going to be different, away from home, and then, or I can be home. You know, in front of my friends, in front of my family, which I thought that was a career ender for me. You know, for a guy who's trying to be great at what he does, having my friends around all the time, having my family around didn't seem like a smart idea. So I flipped a coin. It landed on Clippers, the most, you know, 7 out of 10.
And, oh, you flipped it 10 times.
Yeah. And then I decided I do what I do best. Go to opposite. So I go to Washington.
So all the even what we know about the Clippers now in hindsight probably was not a great move to go to that franchise either.
To be honest, my mindset at that age, 21 years old, your franchise didn't matter to me. There was a basketball and a basket. That's really all I cared about. I didn't. But you know, you're gonna give me extra shrimp, and I didn't give a shit about if you said hello to me. I don't, yeah. You know, because most of the time, I was in a gym before the staff anyway. You know, so most of the people I didn't see. You know, so I wasn't gonna get to go upstairs and mingle with, you know, the desk workers. You know, I'm just in there to be great at what I am.
So then it's on to DC.
So DC, Ernie Grunfeld, they hired Eddie Jordan, who had success in Sacramento with Bibby Nim, and then success with Jason Kidd Nim. And he has this Princeton offense, which I mean, you know what I mean? I'm every offense I went through is fast paced. So we start off the season. Training camp was different because training camp, they just put the rule in where you can only have 3-hour practices in training camp. Hour and a half of conditioning and hour and a half of contact, which I think pissed off coaches because they were so used to just doing what they wanted to do, 6 hours, 7 hours, they didn't care. And, you know, so there was a lot of running at the beginning because they wanted to, oh, y'all, you know, y'all some bitches, y'all complaining about us. All right, we're going to do line drills for a whole hour and a half. You know, it was those type of, you know, but, you know, I was always in shape, so I didn't fucking worry about training camp. But what I realized is we spent so much time trying to learn the Princeton, which my IQ is high in basketball. And I realized, ooh, we're going to struggle because this offense wasn't made for young players. You know, this offense is a San Antonio, you know, it's made for older veteran teams that can think on the move and react.
Required more discipline, yeah. More cutting.
You know, so it's, you know, reactions. So we struggled early. I ended up getting hurt. The East Coast winter hit. And from a West Coast kid, yeah, who's never been in the snow, you don't know what you're supposed to do or not. You don't know the do's or the don'ts. So one of those don'ts got me hurt again. So I didn't know nothing about show snivels and shit. Like, I didn't know nothing about shoveling snow and get someone out there to do all that. I figured it's snow.
Did you even have snow boots?
No, I had Chuck Taylors then. I'm 21. I had Chucks. I got a Ferrari. None of it's working for the snow.
Yeah, by the way, Chucks in the snow never work well.
So what ends up happening is I do what all West Coasters will probably do. Oh, snow cone, liquid, melts. Got it. Water hose. Spraying the snow with the water hose.
Didn't you see Home Alone?
So I'm spraying the snow with the water with the snow. And I didn't know there's this thing called black ice. Didn't know what that was. So I go to the car, slip, re-pull my groin.
Oh, shit.
Out another month. And then from there, it was just a battle of learning this offense, battling with Eddie Jordan, because it's like, yo, we're me and Eddie Jordan is clashing. Larry Hughes and Eddie Jordan is clashing because you're putting this structured offense in front of a bunch of athletes, not thinkers. So we didn't really perform well. And it was kind of, you know, they just signed me too, so I'm the guy everyone's looking at like, oh, this.
Right, you're the focal point.
Yeah, you just signed a big deal. Kwame's not happy. I mean, we just didn't.
And it was also, it was that awkward time where we still had, you know, MJ's fingerprints all over the team with Stackhouse and Leitner.
You know, Stackhouse was in and out. He didn't really play much that year. You know, he had knee problems, so he didn't really have an impact on much of anything. You know, he got his deal. He was trying to get out. Me and Kwame didn't clash, but, you know, once MJ left, I'm pretty sure he thought it was his team and he was the future and all that. So when I came in, you know, I'm the new guy. And, you know, the new guy is not passing me the ball. But Stackhouse shut that shit down quick. Best meeting ever. You know. Kind of fucked up my funny. Kwame is like, yo, I need more touches. You know, I need to get the ball like Jermaine O'Neal, you know, and then you hear somebody whisper, you mean Jermaine Oatmeal, Jermaine Get Real. Like, you know, so I'm like, oh, shit, this is about to be a problem. You know, as much as we made fun of Kwame, nobody wanted problems with Kwame.
He was like country strong.
He was country, like big, strong. Like he was really, but he wasn't really physical like that. But if he wanted to, everyone was going to shut the fuck up. But, you know, but everyone always threw their jokes in. And then Stackhouse was basically saying, listen, if your ass averaged 5 last year, you're not going to average 20 this year. 5, 7. You're averaging 9. You're doing good. Like, it was like,
let's be realistic.
Yeah, yeah. And it was one of those things, like, it was like, check. Like, you're not going to go from fucking 5 to 20. Nah, that's not going to happen. I mean, few players in NBA history that's ever done that. 5, 7, 9. That's what you can do. Okay? You're averaging that. Be happy. Let's go.
And what did Kwame say to that?
Nothing. Oh. And I'm sitting there like, oh, shit, so I ain't got to pass in the ball. You know? But that was our first year trying to figure out who we were, battling the offense, trying to figure out who's the dominant force, who's, you know, so we really had problems our first year. But as a team, we didn't have any beef. It was just a bunch of 21, 22-year-olds with a bunch of older guys that really didn't, they didn't weigh in. Like, Christian and Lakener didn't weigh in on anything. You know, those guys didn't.
So it was a struggle, but you guys didn't exactly gel with the roster that you
had. We didn't gel or disgel. We didn't. We were trying to figure it out. I mean, it's,
there wasn't chemistry.
Yeah, it was like the Lakers last year.
You knew it was a transition.
It was a transition. You don't know. You know who's being the focal point.
Who they're going to groom
for the
future.
You know who the media is. You know the media. Okay, you got Lonzo Ball. But, you know, Ingram is like, it's my team. You got Jordan Clarkson like, well, shit, I'm technically the best scorer on here. And then you got Kuzma's like, well, shit, I'm a rookie and I'm leading this team in scoring. You got Randall who's like, oh, shit, I don't know what they talk about on him. But there's no conflict between the players themselves, but you trying to figure out who's the dominant force. You're still pecking at the pecking order.
But really, the coaches have to figure that shit out. And if you're not winning games.
Coaches don't have no control over pecking order. You can say he's the man, but if there's another man demonstrating he's the man on the court, the players are going to gravitate to what they're talking about.
So off that, you know, mixed results and even the injury stuff for you, it wasn't immediate success in D.C.
No, so what ended up happening is Eddie Jordan decided to say, you know what, let's go to a playoff game. So we went down to the New Jersey's, because that was his success, for me to watch Jason Kidd. Not to watch how Jason Kidd played and ran offense, because we're two different players, but to see the offense, like, how it's supposed to look. So we're watching, and I'm sitting here like, well, to be honest, in the half court, I'm watching it like, yo, Eddie, in the half court, Jason Kidd has no input. Really. Like, he doesn't have, what is he doing in the half court? Yeah, in full court, you know, he's passing.
Transition stuff, yeah.
But in the half court, the ball is going through the 3 and 4. Our three and four wasn't, they didn't think like that. You know, so how are we going to run this offense if your three, your four, your five are think tanks? You know, so you got Kenyon Martin making backdoor passes, alley-oops. You got the Collins throwing alley-oop to Kenyon Martin. Your 4 and your 5 are really important in this offense. So we did that. I got the playbook, and I said, look, I'll take the playbook, make some changes to it. I'll stick within the playbook, but I'll make a little changes, and I need to look at it to see how I can score and I can be myself within this offense. So instead of just bucking, give me the playbook. I'll study it the whole summer, figure out how, so I know when someone's cutting, how to go down his back, or, you know, just, so I got the playbook, studied it. Then our draft pick was, I think, 5th, and we end up trading with Dallas, Devin Hevers, and got an Antoine Jamison.
Also, Stackhouse and Leitner in that trade.
Stack and Late.
With the pick.
Yes. So me and Larry back, and we get an Antoine. We're older now. Oh, this is going to be good. With Kwame Brown, Jared Jeffries, you know, you got Brendan Haywood, Etan. Like, oh yeah, we got Jarvis Hay. We got, okay, this is going to be good. And sure enough, you know, that second year, like clockwork, we're playing much better.
What did that happen right away? When did you know it was successful?
It happened right away. What we did have is, you remember Lakers backup team? And the same person who led that was leading us, which Shannon Brown, Steve Blake, and that fast tempo. That's who came out. So if the starters were down 5, 10, 15, Steve Blake, Juan Dixon, that Maryland backcourt was pushing that pace, pushing the numbers up so fast that we was catching everybody in the fourth quarter. Like, it was one of those. And I end up having a breakout moment. So Larry Hughes was basically the lead dog that year. Him, Antoine, and I was kind of like third. You know, it was Larry Hughes. He was averaging about 23. I was at the 19-2 area. Antoine was 20-10. Larry Hughes broke his thumb that year. I think he broke it in San Antonio. I went 0 for 12. I went 0 for 12, like one of the worst performances that I had in Washington, 0 for 12. And then woke up and I had to take the team on my back. And that's when I made my all. See, I wasn't originally playing at an all-star level. Larry Hughes was. What ended up happening is when he got hurt, I took on that scoring burden where I think I scored 40 games in double digits. So I was really, I think I was averaging about 27 when he was out.
Were you at times having to break out of the offense? Go ISO more, 1-4 flat?
No, I just knew how to score in the offense. So
so at that point, things had clicked with you
from
that
summer studying the playbook. Yeah, it clicked because I didn't have to defer to Larry. So between me and Larry, because our offense was two guards, two forwards, a center. There was no point earner two. We both did the same job. So when people say, well, he needed to pass the ball more. No, between the two of us, we averaged 11 assists. Between the two of us, we averaged 5 steals. Between the two of us, we averaged 12 rebounds. Between the two of us, 50-something points.
So it was a backcourt of two combo guards.
Yeah, it was two combo guards playing a 1 and a 2. You know, the 3 and a 4 is the 3 and a 4. And that's how we did it. So once he was gone, I had to take on that scoring thing. So I just became a demon. I became a demon and then end up getting picked for the All-Star over Larry, you know, and I made my first All-Star game, which, I mean, if anyone knows anything about the first of anything, it's the most exciting time of your life. I can't stop smiling now thinking about it. Like it was in Denver.
Had you ever been to All-Star Weekend before?
Yeah, with Jason Richardson.
Oh, right. The dunk contest.
You know, when I see my name on that All-Star jersey, I mean, you're talking about a kid. Come on, like that's...
Yeah,
that's grinded, dream come true. Grinded his ass off and all that, and you had an All-Star, and my name is on the back of this All-Star. Like, I don't know if there was clips back from when I did the All-Star game, and I'm cheering like, oh my God, I'm an All-Star, and you know, because I'm with Grant Hill, Vince Carter, Shaq. I mean, Dwayne Wade, LeBron's first one. Like, I'm there. I'm here.
You're one of them.
Yes. It's like, I don't even know if I scored or I don't even know if they put me in a game. I can't remember. I was just so fucking happy that I fucking made the All-Star.
And it's also that what that does to you against your peers. Like, now that elevates you to that All-Star status, which you work so hard. Guys work their whole careers to get to that level.
You know what? I didn't even look at it like that because what the success I had to do to get there. I mean, you're talking about 40 straight double-digit points in scoring. At least 35 of them was 20 and above. I done tasted something. I done tasted, the demons has tasted blood.
You were
he
hooked.
Done tasted a score, a knack for scoring. It became easier. You know, it's, you know, now I'm at, you know, 22, 23, and I just showed a month, 2 months of dominant basketball. Oh, you can't rewind me back. You're not going to rewind me back. And that's how it went. So we made it to the playoffs, going against the Bulls, the Young Bulls. Nobody can really, you have to be an honest person to admit what I'm about to admit. Whoever that coach was it Scott Skiles at the time? No. Who the fuck was that coach? He ain't looked that up. But they should have beat us. They were, paper-wise, they were more complete and better. But I think the benching of Eddie Curry kind of helped us out a little bit. Because when you're talking about the way our team was, they had Chandler and Eddie at the 4-5 against Antoine and Brendan. I mean, Antoine has given up so much height on Eddie Curry. Then you had Luol Deng, Nocioni, and then you have Kirk Heinrich. You had the guards.
Who was on you, Heinrich or Duhon? They would have put Duhon on you.
Duhon on me because Kirk Heinrich, because Larry Hughes was playing great. No. Kirk went back and forth. Whoever was hot, he went to neutralize. Because they had Ben Gordon. So I think Ben Gordon and Larry was. But be honest, the only reason we won that series is because they didn't play Eddie Curry.
That was Scott Skiles, by the way.
They didn't play Eddie Curry, and that, because if he would have played that 4-5, we didn't have nothing for it.
Didn't have an answer for that.
So we dropped the first two games against them, because we couldn't figure out a play they were doing. And I remember we're in game three at home, like clashing, coaching staff and the players. We're like, y'all are fucking stupid. This is not, and then Brendan Haywood was like, listen, stop running the 2-3. The 2-3, what they're doing is they're setting a pick and roll. When we switch it, you have Tyson Chandler on this person. You have, you know, you're doing that. Then they swing it, and then Antoine is on this side. When he's running out the ding, ding is already on the move, burning them every time, and he's getting in the middle every time. That's why we can't stop it. So what we're going to do is we're going to do 1-2-2, put Jerry Jeffries at the top, two guards. When they do the pick and roll, Jerry Jeffries is switching big back to big. You deny that pass up there, they can't swing at the ding, right? It's that fucking easy.
Right.
Coaching staff, of course. Oh, they think they can coach now, huh? If you guys think you coach yourselves. So.
All right.
They leave.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out, and we're doing it. And it's like, oh, that shit worked. Game three, blow the asses out. Game four.
Yeah, you come in down 0-2.
Yeah, blow the asses out. Game five, we're blowing their asses. Oh, we're beating the shit out of them. And it was a harder series for me because I was averaging like 30-something against them during regular season. And then they honed in on the playoffs, which it was my first experience on how to adjust. You know, it's because, you know, you go into like, yeah, I've been busting your ass for the whole year. And in the playoffs, you're shutting me down. Why?
Because you're seeing them night after night.
Because they're adjusting.
Right.
Okay, this is what he did in the playoffs. We're going to shut it down. So I remember Scottie Pippen telling our trainers, like, they're focused on him. He needs to defer. And then pick his spots. This is just one of those series. If you guys want to win it, he can't try to score 30. He can't. 15, 17, and let everybody else score, get the pressure off him, and it'd be better. And that's what ended up happening game 2, 3, 4. So game 5, we're up. We're up like 15, 20. Crowd is in the parking lot chilling. Chilling in the parking lot. I think we're up like 12, 15 with a minute left, minute and a half left. They put in bench player, Pargo. Put in Pargo, okay. Pargo comes in, boom, hits a three. Okay, I hit a three. We miss, boom, Pargo hits another three. This one dude brung them back and tied the fucking game up with a minute left. We're in a timeout, fucking distraught. Like, what the fuck
is Yeah, you going hadn't on? Scouted this guy like the other guy. Like, guys.
Yeah, you know, yeah, you but you're talking about one man came in and just...
Instant offense.
The fucking microwave. Never seen nothing like it. It was just boom, 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 boom. I blacked out. I'm sitting there visualizing that basket. And I said to myself, oh, this is the moment you've been waiting for, right here. Eddie Jordan's drawing up a play. To this day, I can't tell you what he called, what he drew, but I know it wasn't for me. Because Larry Hughes was having 30-something. He had 30-something that night. And all I just told, look, this is how selfish I was. I told Anthony Piller, yo, who's taking the ball out? Like, we just went through a play. So when they say, do NBA players pay attention to locker and timeouts? I can tell you, no. Because whatever play they drew up, I didn't even know who took the ball out of bounds. Uh-huh. I didn't know where I was supposed to go. I just said.
You were off in another galaxy.
Yeah, I already visualized that I'm about to take this last shot and hit this motherfucker in front of this crowd. Yeah. So I told Anthony, yo, hey, who's taking the ball out? He was like, me. Just give me the ball. He was like, yeah, I was supposed to pass you the ball. Oh, good. Okay. It's my play.
Cool.
So I'm up there sizing the time down, and something opened up. Like, oh, shit. Everyone went from this side to this side. It's me and Kurt. Went down the left side. I seen Tyson, you know, like, stop and come over. So I had to throw it up a little bit higher. Go in. Boom. Cheering, you know, going crazy. My first game winner, my first game winner on a big stage.
Right.
You know, in the NBA, the playoffs, game 5. Right,
like they say, that's one of those defining moments.
Yeah, it was like that I'm here moments. when I look back at the play was a double screen down for Larry on the baseline. It was like a baseline double screen coming out of the end. So what I seen, like, oh, shit, he left. He left because I was supposed to sit at the top of the key, and he was supposed to come off a baseline screen. I was supposed to pass the ball. But when I seen him run, I ran that same way, too, to shoot my jumper. And then I remember we're cheering, and we're walking into the locker room, and then someone said, yeah, we'll see y'all game 7. No, y'all not. Yeah. I just ended that.
You took momentum.
I just
too.
Took
You're
this
up
momentum.
3-2.
I just took the momentum. This game is over. Went back to Washington. We're down four. Larry Hughes is dribbling the ball up. Kirk Hyatt steals it. Instead of giving up on a play, I chase Kirk Hyatt down, block. Stop him from going up 6. Would have ended our game. Would have probably sealed the game for them. We come down, hit a 3 or 2, and boom, we end up winning that game. And then we
got the series.
First series in a while. I jump up there, cheer, boom, boom, boom. I remember seeing something in the stands say, "Bring on the heat, bring on the heat, literally." Like, we're bring on the heat.
What is it like to win in D.C.? as you know, that city, obviously the Wizards hadn't been good. They were on a playoff drought. They, you know, it was your first time in the playoffs, hit the game winner. But is it a slept on sport city?
Yeah, because it's a transit city where everyone's in for business, politics, and you know, so they don't realize there's a hardcore DC fan base. And I found out because when I first got there, I was the first NBA player to go down to Berry Farms and play inside the gates. That's what they call it, inside the gates. Because I heard, like, real ball players play there. So the young Kevin Durant in high school, Michael Beasley, but, you know, you got all your street legends, you know, that everyone respect. So no matter if you're playing in the NBA, if you don't go down there and prove yourself to them, they don't respect you.
Is it like the Rucker? Like the Rucker.
Yeah, yeah, or so the Drew Rucker. Yeah, yeah, so it's their Rucker outside. So I go down, drive the Maybach down there, take my Chucks off, put on there, you know, the crowd talking shit, the players, you know, they're trying to do that little gritty. But they never, listen, I'm a bucket getter, man. All right? I'm a bucket getter. Not one of you guys is 7 foot. Y'all are about 6'4", 6'5". This is my game right here. Yeah. So I'm out there just bodying people my first day. And I remember one of the dudes like, yeah, he looks scared. He probably ain't going to come back no more. It became my playground for the summer. You know, so what ended up happening is as my success in the arena was prevailing, my street basketball was prevailing also. So then I bridged two worlds, the street of D.C. and the white America.
The mainstream DC, fan main base, street. Right? The street cred, the street fan base.
And then I brung them all in one. Then became where no white person will look towards the Berry Farms area. But it's like, well, Gilbert's down there. You know, it's Gilbert and, you know, another NBA player's down there. They're playing down there. Then you start sprinkling of mainstream white people come in, right? Then it became a whole event. And then I think that's what really pushed me over to the next level of, you know, what DC was about. So the fans was there. They just never had anyone to really cheer for.
Right. The players didn't come in there and connect to the fans.
Yeah, they didn't connect to the fans. You know, they just stayed NBA players, stayed NBA, and then we're going to go to the club.
Right.
You know?
They'll live the life, yeah. But do you think not enough guys do that now? They go to a new... Like, if Kawhi wants to stay in Toronto, goes there, gets involved and runs there and aims out in
but
the
now,
community.
But now, more. See, they didn't have NBA care program back then.
Yeah, but that, we know, is marketing and
yeah, but they didn't
kind of
have
stuff.
It then where right. The players went into the community and stuff. So either you did or you didn't. But, you know, when it came to basketball, but I had it in my contract where I was the only player that had love for the game basketball clause. So I had the Jordan rule. So it was the love of the game. So I was the only player that actually had it in this contract where that means I get to play anywhere I want. So if I got hurt, who cares? As long as I think it fits my game, I'm going to play. So I was the only player playing in games like that. So when we start making the playoffs, you know, that's where the fan base came from. And I remember... I mean, we played Miami, which was fucking stacked. It was young D-Wade at that time. He called his nickname Flash for a reason. You got Shaq. You got Alonzo. I think Gary Payton and all of them were there that year.
Yeah, and you had, like, well, obviously Udonis Haslem, and I think they – who would have guarded you? That would have been Eddie Jones they had for a time.
They had Eddie Jones a little bit, but that was like Keon Dooling, Damon Jones. But the funny thing is about that series, we get swept, right?
Back to that series.
Yeah, we get swept, getting our ass handed to us. We couldn't stop them. Because, you know, it was Shaq. You couldn't, you know, we didn't. Then when you
back
get off with Shaq.
Having an answer for Biggs.
Yeah, when you get off with Shaq, you got fucking Alonzo. You know, so there was no room for... There was no room for failure. You know, you had to play perfect against them. But the funniest thing about it is because you remember we chanted, bring on the heat.
Right.
Bring on the heat. Game four, we're getting swept. I look in the stands. D
dude with a big ass sign.
when you play with the heat, your ass get burned. Yeah, I spit my Gatorade up because it was just the funniest shit ever. Cause, I mean, because we were chanting that we wanted the motherfuckers, and you got this big old sign like, yeah, it's gonna get burned.
NBA trolling.
Yeah.
But also for you guys, a relatively inexperienced team, you're coming into that series. Did you guys come into that series too high? In hindsight,
too high. I mean, look, the Bulls was four for a reason. You know, Scott Skiles or whatever happened between him and Eddie. That's the reason we really got. I mean, because at that point we were smaller than, you know, a Chicago or, you know, Miami at that time were two big 7-footers would have killed us because we got Brendan, but you got Antoine at 6'9". You know, so that height would have put so much pressure on, you know, Brendan that, you know, we couldn't defend down there. So if Eddie Curry was there, we wouldn't have won that series. So, you know, playing them, we got barbecued.
All right. So that was your first taste of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, the move to get Karan, things change a bit. Did you think you were going to have you, Karan, well, Antoine, and Larry?
No. So what ended up happening is Mr. Poland had to have a triple bypass heart surgery. His only wish before he went in is sign Larry Hughes. Make sure we sign Larry Hughes. When Larry signed to Cleveland. So he goes to Cleveland. When A. Poland woke up, first question, did we sign Larry? And when they had to tell him no, he started crying. Because, that you know, he loved his team. We make the trade for Karan, so we have Karan in. Now we have to replace Larry. So we sign Antonio Daniels. So we start off the season, me, Antonio, Antoine, Jared Jeffries, and Brendan Haywood. So we're smaller than we were before, but you know, but I guess it wasn't working out. Antonio was more of a he wasn't a pure point nor a pure two. So what they were looking for, he wasn't really giving it because he didn't shoot the ball. He didn't shoot the ball well. He was a great driver. You know, he knew how to get fouled. You know, so he was actually a great six man. So what they end up doing is switching Karan and Antonio. And then from there, we take off. You know, I think that's the year average, what, 29?
Yeah, I was going to say, the things that changed for you primarily was that you had to step up on offense without Larry because, like you said, you had that combo of...
Yeah, remember, I tasted that. I tasted what without Larry looked like, and it looked good.
You were hooked.
It looked good. You know, that them 40-something games where Larry was gone, it looked good for me. You know, so when we lost Larry, you know, and we started off the season and Antonio wasn't, you know, putting up 20, I had to take on, you know, that scoring.
Is that something that the coaches told you, or you noticed that yourself? And you...
No, I mean, I had to do it myself. I didn't. Right. I mean, you know, you don't have to tell a score to score.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Green light.
Green light.
So that put the scoring on you and Antoine.
No, Karan is a scorer.
Right.
I mean, Tough Juice is a funny name because we was like, he's Tough Juice on offense. Like, Karan, like, Karan was the best because he'd knock your head off for the ball. Like, offensive rebounds, diving for the ball, that was Tough Juice. He was going to get it. So we always made a play about it. Like, yeah, Coach, he's Tough Juice.
Coach gave him that nickname?
He's seeking that, yeah. Because he was our tough guy. He was our grunt guy. You know, he did all. You know, that's what I said. Offensive rebounds. He did the things a lot of players didn't do.
The lunch pail stuff. Yeah. So then that team. I mean, really, yeah. You were loaded. Mm-hmm. I feel, but it was early, right? Also that season, Gannon All Star.
Well, technically.
Right.
Technically, the pieces of shit in the East Coast decided they want to play favoritism, all-star voting, because Larry Brown over in the Pistons decided it should be about winning and this and that and four Pistons, five Pistons. And, you know, they're friends. So this is when I found out that the reserve picks are fucking stupid, because how fans vote. Fans vote, okay, you got two guards, two forwards back then, one center. When coaches vote, it's top seven. There's no order. There's no two guards. So you can, one coach can pick five guards. So what ends up happening is they take the top votes, and that's who becomes All-Star. Well, you would think the top votes, if they're guards, you will have seven reserve guards. No. Whoever gets this list decides, okay, we're going to pull these two as guards. Ooh, this third guard has more votes than the rest of them. Ooh, but we got those two spots filled up already. So we're going to go to the next guy who has two votes, but no one has more votes than him in his position. So they end up doing the same thing as fan voting, you know, which they don't tell the coaches that, which is the fucked up part. So they're manipulating this voting process, because let's say me and Paul Pierce, both were tied. Who's deciding this tiebreaker?
Coaches.
No one. No one knows. No one's deciding the tiebreaker. It's just whoever got it, David Stern, get this and say, okay, well, they're tied. Well, Chauncey Billup and Rip are already the backup point guard, so we don't need Gilbert. We're going to go with Paul. That's what they're doing. You know, so that's why when you say, well, how the fuck did this guy make the All-Star game? Is because in his position as the 3-4, he was fine.
But
so I got snubbed.
As it worked out. Yeah, first got snubbed, but you didn't make it.
Okay, so yeah, I got snubbed, and Jermaine O'Neal got hurt. But the problem with the snub wasn't that you're snubbing a guy who's averaging 29.1, which was fourth in the NBA. So what you decided to do is go, all right, we're going to take first, second, third, skip fourth, go fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10, 11, 12, then make the All-Star game, which was, then it was like, okay, it's about winning. Okay, we're fifth. We're five. We're fifth. So I'm automatically there. So the problem that you, the fact that you actually snubbed me, where I'm fourth in leading, my team is fifth. There's, what the fuck are you thinking about? So I decided, I got mad, and I said, I'm the East Coast assassin. I'm gonna wreck every East Coast team that didn't vote for me. And the bad part about that is, I'm the only player, I don't want to say the only, but I'm probably the only player that ever gave coaches anything for getting selected. So every time I got selected, I sent them fruit baskets. 3 years, fruit baskets. So the fact that I sent your ass a fruit basket after my first All-Star and you snubbed me on my second means you didn't like that shit.
Or they never got it.
Yeah, so no, they got it.
Picked it up in the office.
They got it. So we go to the All-Star game. We do this. You know, Jermaine O'Neal's my dude because of that. I made it because of you. Oh, no. Somebody tried to pull the boss move on David Stern.
Who was that?
Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd came out and said, if I'm not the replacement, I'm not playing on the USA basketball team.
yo, did he just try to? He's pulling one of those moves.
Would it was something in his contract that he would have got a bonus? I don't know. All-star?
I don't know.
I think a guy at that point in his career.
He was playing well.
He was playing well, right?
You know, he was playing well.
But it's not like he hadn't been in the All-Star game before.
But my, A. Pauly wasn't having that shit. He called David Stern and said, I don't give a fuck what you're thinking about. You're not snubbing him twice. Not for no Jason Kidd at this point. You know, so I end up making it. And then during my press conference, I tell him, I can't wait to get back to regular season because I'm fucking them up. The sad part is, I did the same thing I was doing before. Now it was, oh my God, he's living up to his word. Wait a minute. That's what this is about. If I say it and do it, I'm a god. If I do it and don't say nothing, they don't see it. Then the personality of the shit talker emerged. And that's where Hibachi came from. Because of that experience where, because I said I was going to kill the East Coast and I'm the East Coast assassin, and I'm doing the same thing I did when you snubbed me, but now you're praising me, player of the week, player of the month, player of the week, player, like, what? You guys are stupid.
But you realize that when you put yourself out there like that, when you talk the talk, but you could back it up, that's where you got the attention from.
Yeah, but
fans loved it. Fans ate it up.
But that's the problem. I'm averaging 29 already.
Right.
I didn't average a point more. I'm doing the same exact thing, but because I put words behind it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, he's killing everybody. He's doing what he said he was gonna do. Or, you know, I'm doing the same thing I was doing before.
It's an art form. I just want you
to
see that enough.
I just want you to look at me, you fucking doofus. You know, and that's where the shit talking came.
Yeah, not a lot of guys can do that. They aren't shit talkers. They're used to just letting their game back it up.
If you're in a small town, I realize you got to shit talk. Especially if you're a scorer. Like if you're Damian Lillard, shit talk. You're going to put up a 27, 28. Put some words behind it.
Not in his personality, though.
I know. But you see why he gets snubbed all the time.
Right. All right, so where you're at this point, you're the man in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You've connected to the fans.
Black president.
All the nicknames start rolling.
Yeah.
They were black president.
Yeah, I came in with the black president.
Before Obama, by the way.
Yeah, this way before Obama. From MySpace. Someone got a hold of my MySpace account. And you know how you got like top eight,
mm-hmm.
your friends. Yeah. It was like all these beautiful women that I didn't know, but they were just beautiful. And it says Secret Service. So I was like, oh shit, you're the black president and that's your secret. Oh, no, because my name was Black President 01. And then that was my Secret Service. And then someone was like, oh man, you're like an agent. You're like a 00 agent. And that's where Agent Zero came from.
How about Hibachi? Was that 06?
That was... Yep, that was those.
When you had all those scoring games to get before the All-Star break.
No. Hibachi didn't come in until 2000, when Larry left. That year, 2006, yeah. 2005, 2006.
Okay. All right. What else? What other nickname are we for not getting to?
That was it.
Okay. That's damn. So you had the nickname.
Hibachi wasn't a nickname. It was a phrase.
It was a frame of mind.
And it was it was Brendan Haywood. He was like, so the year before I started using it, he was like, yo, you and Larry get fucking barbecued out there, bro. They got your ass on the Hibachi grills out there. It was like, so I remember. I was like, yo, we Hibachi and a few people too, dog. Don't just say we out here getting queued up like shrimp and fucking chicken. And then I remember when I started hitting like three shots, I was like, ooh, I got him on the Hibachi grill and I started doing this. And then from there, it just clicked.
So you owned it. At that point, you owned the nickname. But what everybody wants to get to from that 06 season was the Crab Dribble playoff matchup with LeBron and Cleveland. So I think that's what we're going to pick up next time.
Okay.
As we go through the years here in the early days of the No Chill podcast. So yeah, that's coming next. Thank you to Life Recovery Water.
Mm-hmm.
And also be sure to subscribe, iTunes, SoundCloud, catch the video on YouTube. We'll be back again.
All right. The Crab Dribble.
Infamous.
Fucking travel. That's what it is. No Crab Dribble. It was a travel. Still too fast. She a thought to me, and me a thought to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally. She a thought to me, and me a thought to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally. She a thought to me, and me a thought to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally. She a thought to me, and me a thought to she. But the day is coming that we must meet personally.